The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going In Raw, we touch on some popular sectors right now, some news in the OTC market, and much more.
Hey, yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav in the building for the Atlas crew.
Atlas Trading, what the f*** is up?
They're traders, they're prodigies, and then there's legends.
We're up 4%, baby.
No way.
4%
Buy the f***ing dip.
Hey, who told me about IDEX?
Like, dude, what the fuck? Like, someone just made, like, a lot more money than me on my trade.
You find out. Life's this game of pennies.
Did you check the portfolio?
Pennies.
The margin for error is so small.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
And they out here making money right now off of penny stocks.
The two guys is putting in work to make y'all rich.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Time to think big.
Pennies going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity at Dips.
And Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny Strokes, baby.
Today's episode of Pennies Going In Raw is brought to you by Benzinga. Benzinga is our absolute favorite resource to use to trade with. We use it for charts and news and scanners. Look, guys, we use it for everything except for buying and selling stocks. I mean, that's all there is to it. And if you're not using Benzinga Pro, which you can get for 2 weeks free at pro.benzinga.com, that's pro.benzinga.com, you should at least be checking out their YouTube channel every single day, youtube.com/Benzinga. They have Hot Stocks Luke's and a just plethora of fantastic guests from me and Hugh to Mia Khalifa, to Ripster, to CEOs of companies, to CEOs of Webull. They have it all, guys. Make sure you check it out. That's youtube.com/Benzinga. Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going In Raw. Today is Wednesday, June the 23rd, and we're seeing sectors run. We're seeing the market hot. You know, we go from EVs one day to weed the next day, and you're finally seeing a lot of these sympathy plays work. You can catch sympathy options like Manziel was talking about. And but yeah, I mean, you're just seeing these wins all over the place, and it's good to see.
Yeah, no, it's awesome to see all around. You know, you have Clove, the volume just is back in the market, which is which is great, because for what was it, like 6 weeks, it was just gone. So it's really cool to see. I love it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, what have you been playing a lot mainly? I've even been finding myself, like, after talking to Manziel and getting that options, like, you know, have your sympathies and find the ones on their dip. I've been trying to do that, and I've had some relative success with that. How have you kind of been playing in this market?
Yeah, I mean, I've been going heavy on swings. That's pretty much what it's been. Most of my account is in like 4, 5, 6 swings at a time. And then I've just been managing them on, you know, like when price targets come out and it rips, I'll sell some on dips, you know, I'm adding things like that. That's pretty much how I'm doing it.
Yeah, it's back to almost a swingers market. And although you mentioned that you were selling the rest of your TRCH around 6 or something, it hit what, 11?
Yeah. I think it almost hit 12, actually. I mean, it basically doubled from where I sold it. And I was still up 300%. I was up like 340%, and it still doubled from there. Like that is that. If you have an average of around 2 and you sold at 11, I mean, that's a sick trade.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of people, you know, a lot of people saw you say you were selling the rest of your TRCH shares. I expressed how I was not pleased with your decision to do that. However,
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about this in New Jersey this weekend. But yeah, could you kind of go over your thought process about why you mentioned
you were selling it, and then it proceeded to go up another 100%. Did you feel like that was stupid in hindsight?
No, God, no. In fact, I made my decision. I was up 300%, it was a call that was up 300%, 400% from the initial call. We never talk about sales. The only time that I talk about sales is one, when I feel that I can't create volume that will bring it down. So for instance, this thing was doing like 200 times the normal volume. So I knew that even if every single one of my followers had 10,000 shares, it wouldn't even make a difference based on the average volume during that time. And so that was one of my reasons I said my sales. The other reason is when I genuinely have that kind of like icky feeling. And that's the kind of feeling that I got when I went over my risk to reward for TRCH. And that's the only time that I really do it, when I feel like there's so much hype and everybody's on the long side and there's no way that you didn't make money. It gave tons of opportunities. So if I feel that my volume won't affect the downward motion of the stock, and I get that kind of like hunch of like, hey, this just doesn't feel right, and I almost want to give like a warning, if that makes sense, you know. And I mean, you know, it did go up another 100%, but we see exactly what's happening. They're creating, you know, I mean, it created liquidity, and they just sold paper into the shareholders. You know, they gave a date. It was all pretty much coerced. They gave a date for the ex dividend date, and they dropped $250 million onto retail. So all in all, I feel good about where my sales were. The thesis was correct. The timing was off by 100%. But all in all, the icky feeling that I got was still right.
Okay, understandable. So another thing, it just came out today, and we're not going to go too deep into it because, you know, we know just as much as everyone else, but just last episode we had on, you know, Laid Back and Wolf of Wheat Street, and they both expressed, you know, there's scumminess, you know, there's always going to be scumminess in OTCs and even in options, how they mentioned. But today in the OTC market, one company even just came out after like massive drops that they're having a lawsuit against someone who promoted the stock a lot. They looked like they were hand in hand, and it just turns out wasn't the case.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the reasons that I genuinely pretty much stay away from OTCs, is because it doesn't even matter. It really, sometimes it doesn't even need to be like a specific thing that goes wrong with OTCs. It's just so many screwed up things that don't happen on the NASDAQ. Like, I don't know. Like, I genuinely thought that there was something going on behind the scenes together, but now you have the CEO suing the biggest cheerleader, you know, and I don't know. I did briefly read it, and it'll be really interesting to see how this pans out, if they have a case or not. I've never really seen somewhere where I think they're claiming that shareholders were given information and they screamed it from the top of the mountains, which,
like, yeah, they shouldn't have mentioned something, and then they ended up electronically communicating that pretty vigorously from what it says.
But my question is that if they signed an NDA, then 100% in the wrong. But if not, then didn't you just give them insider information and they gave that insider information out? So isn't the company liable too? I don't know. It'll be really interesting, but I think that's like kind of like the two paths. If you made them sign an NDA and they communicated electronically, then yes, 100% in the wrong. If you didn't sign an NDA and you just gave them insider information, like, then
like you're tattling on yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll be really interested to see how this plays out.
But I think like with this whole thing is mainly just, There's a lot to unravel. A lot seemed weird from the start, and I guess we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, this isn't what FinTwit is really about, so it sucks that, you know, it gets this bad look when something like this happens. All right. Well, now going on to sectors, you know, we've been talking about it already. I mean, the sectors have been heating up. You see weed EVs, you see bios, and it seems like it goes day by day. Like, what's going to happen? I remember, you know, a few weeks ago you mentioned how bios were going to heat up. Are you kind of seeing that now?
Yeah. So we pretty much saw a lot of bios heat up. And part of that goes to the overall thesis that we talked about, which was that we saw this rotation back into growth. So the typical may go away for growth. We actually, or our thesis was that it was actually going to be volume coming into it. And part of that is that when volume comes out of growth, or, you know, let's call it like speculation growth, the first thing that gets hit are bios. And the same exact thing, when volume goes in, the first thing that goes is bios, because they're usually hit the hardest. So that's why I think that, you know, so we saw bios. Now I think we're making this rotation into EVs and into, you know, really weed, especially as more headlines come out. And the other thing that's huge is that Tesla's trying to break this massive downtrend. I think it's been in like a 3 or 4 month downtrend, and it's trying to break out of that. So that'll help EVs and any new headlines that come out. You know, the new administration has now been in, I think, like 150 days, something like that. So now they can actually start, you know, now they got like the administration things out of the way. Now it's going to be more about like actually going to work, I guess we can call it. So now they can start to really hone in on what they want to do. You know
how weed and EVs, they're both becoming like super hip, super popular, very rad and cool all at the same time. Everyone's driving Teslas, everyone's getting high, you know, but a lot of it is still like a long term out with, you know, in California, what is it, like 2035, you know, every car has to be electric, and it's still going to take time for states like mine, the beautiful state of Alabama, to finally come around to allowing us to smoke some pot. But what do you kind of think for, you know, those sectors going forward?
Yeah. So this goes back to I said it on Kenny, Scotch and Sticks. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. When I was talking to KP, we were actually talking about this. And one of the biggest things that really helped my trading was realizing that if it's on CNBC, it's too late. And that's nothing against CNBC. It's just if everyone already knows about it, then it's too late to buy in. And with these kind of sectors, I think that we're going to see that. So I think that by the time that's federally approved and it's federally, you know, mandated and everything, that's when I think, you know, like all the cheap money or all the smart money will already be in it. I think that the cheap and smart money or the money that is smart is already getting in and is already accumulating different companies. And you're seeing, you know, you're seeing like VC funds throw billions and billions of dollars at these sectors. And that's because I think that, you know, I believe it was Connecticut for weed just got legally approved yesterday. They were the 19th state. So, you know, it's slowly but surely more states are getting approved. And I think that you're seeing all these VC funds throw billions of dollars because they want to be first in, so that when it is federally approved, that it will be, you know, we'll already have an ecosystem and we'll already have supply chains set up. You know, big VC funds are not going to wait until the feds allow it and then start working on it. They know it's coming, so they're already getting in. So I think that the typical investor is going to wait till it's federally approved. And I'm talking about everything. I'm talking about, you know, EVs. I think that everyone's waiting for like, you know, 2030 to really start to like look at stocks for real, or, you know, companies that are EV heavy, besides Tesla, obviously. And I think the same thing with weed is that everyone's waiting for it to be federally approved before they really start looking at it as a business opportunity. And I think that what we've seen time and time again is that the smart money gets in before everyone else. Warren Buffett, you know, he has like $800 billion in cash right now, or something stupid, like something insane.
Hell yeah. You know? I mean, Michael Burry's on the other, he's shorting the EVs.
Yeah. And you know, I think he covered his short on Tesla But I think that I think he's short the market, I think, right now. Or is he short both?
I just remember him being vocal about being short Tesla. I didn't know whether or not if he covered it.
I did the math. I think he made like $500 million, around $500 million from his Tesla short. Isn't that insane?
Yeah, it's like $4 billion too short to make another, short of making another movie about it, though. So not enough.
Yeah. But so I think all the smart money is moving in now, and that by the time that weed is federally approved, that we are going to, that's going to be already too late for investors because all of the good deals are kind of getting scooped up now.
Yeah. I think another thing, totally forgot. Usually we talk about this at the beginning. We're a little scatterbrained today. Bitcoin, it went under 30, I believe, a couple days ago, bounced back a little bit, but, yeah, man, I tweeted this out, but if this keeps up, the next crypto conference is going to be in Alabama, not Miami, you know, and not the nice parts. It's going to be in like Mobile, you know?
Yeah. Do most of the big Bitcoin guys on Twitter are they just holding, or do they trade around the core like the one
big
that we had on?
No.
Yeah.
I think most of them hold. I mean, you see it. It just, I don't know about the ones on Twitter. Maybe they do trade around it, but the way a lot of them talk,
like Pomp.
Pomp, dude, that he seems like a hodler, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like he's one of the only Bitcoin guys that I genuinely like follow. Well, not like I don't really follow him, but I do follow him.
Yes, tweets pop up on my fucking timeline all the damn time. I do not follow his ass.
All the damn. Yeah, and so yesterday or 2 days ago, he said something like, "Stop telling young people to day trade." And I've never interacted with him, but that was something where I was like walking home, having a great day, and I was like, no. Like I can't just let this go. This is a guy that's, you know, talking about a cryptocurrency 24/7, you know, saying that it's going to take over the world, and you're going to tell young people not to day trade. I don't know. So that was the first time that I replied to one of his tweets, but then it got me thinking, like, do these people genuinely hold? Like, did this guy see his net worth
cut in half? Yeah.
Get cut.
But I mean, yeah, like, I imagine half, then their net worths are so ridiculously high because their averages are probably like $17.81 or some shit.
Like a 10,000 coins,
yeah,
or something.
Like, yeah, I think they're, yeah, all right.
Yeah, but like, so then what do they do? Like, is it
when they need money? Yeah,
do you money? You just sell them?
Maybe,
but
they.
Then, I don't.
That's a good question. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. If you guys know any big Bitcoin guys, like we're talking
nerds,
like
virgin, like real,
yeah, like
virgins,
have to have like 10 million. Yeah. Like they have to have substantial amount of
and
Bitcoin.
It, we want someone that's been holding it since it was triple digits or less. And this is the only money they need because they're loaded. How do they handle it? But I mean, if you had it at 50 and you bought 2000 and you have 2000 at 30,000, that's what, like, we tried to do math on the show before, but it's like $60 million. Like, you could just sell a little bit of Bitcoin every time you need.
Oh, dude, that's $120 million.
Yeah, it's a fuck ton.
That's a,
so you just sell a little bit of Bitcoin every time you need. Like, who cares? And so when it was at 60, he had a quarter of $1 billion.
Oh my goodness, that's insane.
Yeah,
that's insane. Yeah, so seriously, if you guys know, or hell, we'll have you on the show, because the one thing is that Big Chez gave us a really good technical episode, but I'd be really interested in behind, like, kind of like the idealist people, like the people that, like, genuinely will not think differently other than Bitcoin will take over.
Do you think it hurts them? Like, okay, let's say they do what we just said, like, they've been in it for so long, they have so much money, and they just sell whenever they need cash. Do you think it physically hurts them to sell their Bitcoin for useless American, like, Tinder?
Because
they're like, why can't I just buy this shit with my Bitcoin? Why do you not want my Bitcoin? Why do you want this worthless piece of paper?
Yeah, I could see the Bitcoin community is a lot like, Yeah, I mean, the Bitcoin community definitely seems like a real clan.
I think cult so is I the word you're like, looking for. I don't know if clan yeah, that's is what I was, the most I was acceptable trying to think of the cult term.
And what I was thinking was that I could definitely see them. I could definitely see a few of them that I'm thinking off the top of the head that like I've heard of. I could see a few of them getting in like a fight at like a Walmart because they don't accept Bitcoin. Like what do you mean?
Yeah, like,
you want USD?
Yeah, no, I've actually watched this video where this guy's going around. And he's like, I'll offer you. And this was whenever it was like $7,000. So, I mean, looking back, it would have been a decent idea. But he was like, I'll give you $5 in cash, a $10 Visa gift card, or $15 in Bitcoin. And all of them were like, yeah, I'll just take the cash. I don't think anyone accepted the Bitcoin.
But see, okay, but and I know people have answered this question. I just don't, because it has to be something that you think about, I would assume, is that with the fluctuation in Bitcoin, there's an, I don't think that alone could make it a tender, like a currency tender, yeah. Because yeah, you know what I mean? Like a legal tender, because if you had given me $10 worth,
I would have put it in UABS.
Well, if you had given me $10 worth 2 months ago, now it's $5. So how does anything really hold?
Imagine like walking into a car dealership like with it and it drops like 15%. Yeah. Like how do you handle it? Like it goes. Yeah, that'd be a lot. I mean, obviously you'd handle it the same way, but sometimes you'd be like, shit. Couldn't I have bought it?
I mean, that's
couldn't I have bought the car 15 minutes ago?
Exactly. So I think like there has to be a world where that becomes more stable, because you certainly cannot have the fluctuations you have now. I mean, Bitcoin moved 20%.
Elon Musk is just changing the world's the world's currency by a tweet.
Well, yeah, exactly. He's like, oh shoot, I only got 13 Bitcoins in this wallet. Hang on a minute, you know, like Bitcoin to the moon. Yeah. And then now his 13 Bitcoins are worth substantially more. Yeah. So, I think that if this really ever does go somewhere as like a legal tender, I think there has to be some kind of stabilization overall. But I don't know
it's like one thing I was thinking is like, why would America use Bitcoin as its one? And I'm gonna get roasted on Twitter for this. Why would America be like, yeah, Bitcoin will be the next thing? Why not just use SPY? We'll just use one share of SPY, and it fluctuates a good bit, less than Bitcoin, you know?
Talking about coins, the other thing that... Did you see Titan Coin? It went from $64 to zero.
Yeah, so it had that big run, and, you know, I even saw about where Mark Cuban, you know, he got in it, and he was in the whole crash, and he was, you know, he took the blame. He said, it was on me for not doing my homework, but... You know, things tank in the.
So what do you think? Like, how do you think of it? How much do you think he had in it? I know that's a loaded question, but the other thing is that do you follow someone? Like, if he says that he's long a stock now, but like, if he didn't do his homework on a shit coin, like, what makes me as like an investor be like, oh yeah. Like, now I'm going to follow Mark Cuban
into
his public company.
Well, dude, what's scarier than that, you know, Mark Cuban is at least somewhat reliable in a business sense. But
yeah.
I think there's so many people that are, and just influencers or just famous people in general, that are realizing they can say something and make their money go up 20%. And, you know, influencers and these famous people discovering low float cryptocurrencies is a dangerous thing, especially for all of their young fans. You know, obviously they're probably not opening Coinbase and buying them, but at the same time, some are. I mean, it's the same thing as like with their merch, except this, they're not getting a t-shirt for $40. They're getting like sold into a pipe dream.
Yeah, especially like I saw these scammers were creating different coins on named Addison Rae or something, or like they were like different variations like named after her, and they were bidding the hell out of it, and she didn't even say anything about it. Like, she didn't even know that this was a thing, and people were losing like tons of money, and you know, it's really funny, because even when I started trading, like nobody, I was like the youngest trader that I knew, like nobody was even investing, like maybe your parents had account set up for you or like a 529. Now it's
drop this podcast 3 years ago, we'd have like 14 listeners.
Yeah, we would be
nerds. No one would care.
I mean, I guess.
No, I'm really cool though.
even like Doge, there's like 11-year-olds who one kid bought Doge at like 0001. His parents are like stupid rich, so he threw like $20,000 in or something, and it went to 2.7 million. Okay, and he wrote it all the way down to a million, and like he just doesn't conceptualize like how much money that is. He's like, eh. Like what?
Dude, I mean, like it's that's, the, it's and the I same mean, with those like still those Wall Street bets. Whenever the option shit, whenever it was all crazy at the beginning, and you can find them on YouTube, like all the stories of the people that turned 20,000 into 200,000, then that 200,000 into 400,000, and then we're gonna, you know, one more day. We're at 650. We're gonna hold these out the money options one more day, and then it's down, and then they just blow it all, and you never hear from them again. And it's like they just see these gains, and you know, three ginormous wins in a row. I mean, it takes it out of reality for you, I guess.
No, it definitely does, and that's what I mean is that like to conceptualize it, and even admittedly for me, like when I have like a big day, I don't really think about it. Like it's more of like it's not like wow. Like I just made somebody's salary times. You know what I mean? Like it's more of like a nice. Well,
one thing
know?
I find myself relating to the people that, you know, do that. Cause you'll see comments saying, you know, if I just got $700,000 off of $20,000, I would at least take out like $500,000, be set for years. Yeah, but I always say, you know, if I ever have a 45K or 50K day, you know, I'm definitely taking out $25,000, $30,000. Like, why not, dude? 20K that day is enough to keep in the account. That's enough for compound. And I'll pay myself 30. I paid myself $2,500 the day I made 50, you know? So it was just.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that that's like a whole paycheck and it's not even, that's like someone's paycheck. And you're just like, that's just like, what is that? 5% of your gain, something like that. So it's really cool. Yeah. It's funny because when I first started trading, all I said to myself was like, hey, if I can make 50-60K a year, I'm set. Like I don't need to live like this super lavish lifestyle, because at that time when you would go on YouTube and search for investing,
it's guys in
like,
Lambo,
it wasn't like yeah it was guys in Lambos like buy my $10,000 CDs, and I didn't have $10,000 to spend on CDs. So you know, I was like, man, like I don't need all this, like I don't need a Lambo, I don't need to be like one of those guys with the Rolexes.
Yeah, me neither.
but now it's like once I started making the money, it really does kind of become like one of those, like it's never enough. And you know, I don't think it ever will be enough, but I also just love our job. Like even on the red days, like it's more like I just sit there, I'm like, damn.
It's
you know,
like, I always conceptualize it like this or say it like this. This is, I think, the only job where if you made $1 million the day before, you're coming back the next day just as excited, if not more excited, to work again. Like you just hit the lottery and you're not calling in saying, fuck you, dude, I quit. I'm going home, not coming to work tomorrow. No, you're like, oh, dude, tomorrow I'm making $2 million.
Yeah. Well, because this is the only place where you really can make that kind of money. I mean, yeah, you can obviously lose it, but what I was trying to explain to someone was that yes, you can lose your entire investment, but how many times have you come to the market and something's gone to zero, like and you've had no chance to get out? Okay, binary events, fine. Like, yeah, you have a chance of losing 50%, but you know, knock on wood, I've never come to the market and never been able to not sell any shares. Never.
Yeah. You're not playing out the money options enough close to expiration.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. Is that when you're taking commons, I kind of sit there and I'm like, okay, what's my max loss here? You know, if you put $100,000 into something, okay, let's just say that even your max loss is $50,000. Even if you make 10% on that, that's still $5,000. That's most people's month. So as long as you make 1% a week, you're basically clearing, you're clearing the average American salary, which is how I always try to conceptualize it. And it's tough now because the only people that I talk to really on like a daily basis are you,
other traders,
other traders. And most of them are, you know, I mean, when I talk to Zach, you know, just the other day, I'm like, dude, like I'm having a kick-ass day, blah, blah. He's like, dude, awesome. And I'm like, dude, how you doing? And obviously I want him to do well, but just once I would like to do just a little bit more.
Oh, dude, no, if you want to make like, more money than Zach, you just swing the same thing he's swinging and wait for it to have a red day. And then he has so many more shares than you that you made more money than him.
That's true. But see, that's what we were fighting about, was that I was assuming that he was going to have like a little bit of, like, I was having a great day and AHT was down like 10%. So I was like, I was like, this might be the day that I make more than him, because it's been over like a year and a half since the day that I've made more than him. And he sends me like $2.3 million. And I'm like, I'm sitting in my account and I did like really well. I did like, you know, quarter of a mil or whatever. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I can't win at this game. So it's really funny because I used to say that if I could make $50,000 a year, then I would be so happy. And now I make $250,000. I'm like, damn it, like back to the drawing board. And so that's why I think we preach so much about compounding gains, because even him, he was making $5,000 2 years ago. Now he's making, I think he averages like $1 million a day or something probably.
You know, some of those things, can't compare yourself to someone else. Take it day by day, take it by percents, and grow your account to $1 billion. With that being said, leave us a 5-star review on Apple, because I've been seeing some ones. People are being mean. You know what's weird that I don't like? People be like, oh yeah, I like this, great podcast. But there's just one thing I don't like, 1 star. And it reminded me, whenever I was in Miami, I was looking at something. I was looking at a mall on the Apple Maps, and there was a 3-star review. And it's like, I really wanted to go to all the upper class stores like Gucci and Louis, but there was an active shooter in there. So we didn't get to shop. 3 stars. I'm like, an active shooter only takes you from 5 to 3? Like, oh my God. And us saying the F word too much takes us to 1? Give me a break.